It's a beautiful day in Anchorage. I'm Charles Wolforth. This is Hometown Alaska. If the fish are there, this is the kind of day when you want to get out of the office and get next to a stream or get out on a boat and try to catch some. With me, it's usually trying rather than actually catching, but I'm hoping that I might get some tips and learn a little bit more from my guest today as we talk about fishing in Anchorage and fishing a little bit from Anchorage. It doesn't all have to be in city limits. And we're hoping to get some of your calls. We're going to have some real fishing experts on the show today. If you have questions or comments you want to talk about the summer's fishing opportunities, please come on the show with us. It's going to be our last Hometown Alaska for a month. We're taking a break, but it seemed to me the perfect time to take up the subject of sport fishing in Anchorage. So my first guest today is Ken Marsh. He's with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. He's also a longtime writer and journalist writing about the outdoors in Alaska. I'm sure you've probably seen a bunch of his stuff, and obviously a very, very avid fisherman. Which came first for you, writing or fishing?
Oh, definitely fishing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it started when I was, I think, 2 years old, but I know I've got documented photographs when I was 4 or 5 on the Kenai River with rainbow trout, so it goes back a long way.
All right. So we're a pretty unique city. People say, oh, Anchorage isn't in Alaska, but you can see it from there. But I don't know how many other cities in the country you can sort of walk from your downtown hotel and fish salmon from the under a highway bridge, you know, that probably nowhere else.
Absolutely, yeah. We're definitely distinctive in that regard. We also have lots of fishing in local lakes and other streams like Campbell Creek, Chester Creek, of course, Ship Creek, which you're alluding to there. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we have some wonderful fishing opportunities here, even some hike-in fisheries just in our backyard.
Hike-in, like up in the Bicentennial Park or something? Or?
Even beyond that, I'm thinking like Symphony Lake out of Eagle River, which opens to fishing on Sunday, July 1st, for Arctic grayling. Gorgeous alpine setting. Those are stocked fish that are put in by the Department of Fish and Game, and great fishing for grayling to 18 inches long.
Okay. So I know there's some information sources, and we've linked some of them on our website at alaskapublic.org. You just go to alaskapublic.org, click on today's show, and we have some links there that Ken has given us for Anchorage Area Lakes, the weekly fishing reports that Fish and Game puts out, and then the emergency orders and news releases, which unfortunately is the hot topic right now, because our biggest and most prized fish is just not showing up. What's happening with king salmon right now?
Well, king salmon right now is, there are a lot of mysteries surrounding it, but it's very widespread. What we're having is some poor...
Basically a run failure, huh?
Yeah, well, I wouldn't call it a run failure, but I'd call it some very weak returns statewide. And that suggests to our biologists that it's so widespread that it's likely some conditions that are happening out in the ocean.
Mm-hmm. And what kinds of orders have been put in place to deal with that? I know that, there's changes on the Kenai River. There's not even catch and release, as I understand.
Yeah, that's true. Most recently, we actually had to close by emergency order the entire Susitna River drainage. This is the first time I remember that happening. It's possible it's happened a long time ago. These type of things are cyclic as far as king runs coming in, you know, cycles of paucity and abundance. But it's the first time I can remember such a widespread closure on the Susitna River drainage. This is happening, restrictions are happening from the Susitna River drainage to Kodiak Island all the way over to the Nooshigak River in southwest and beyond.
Wow. So this is not an issue of a wild run versus hatchery run. The hatchery fish are going to be hit just as hard as the wild run fish in this kind of situation.
Absolutely, and that's exactly what we're seeing at this point.
Okay. What about Ship Creek? I mean, that's our little local baby. Is that also potentially going to be shut down?
That's possible. I know we're looking at it now. In fact, we may be issuing an emergency order on Ship Creek to close that to king salmon fishing in the next couple of days. So I would caution listeners to be aware of that. What we have going on there is we don't really know how many fish are returning to Ship Creek right now. The waters are unusually high and muddy, so we can't see them returning. And considering their importance as a broodstock source for returning to Ship Creek, and for our local catchable programs in the lakes, including the Anchorage area lakes, Matsu lakes, Kenai Peninsula lakes, and other stream type systems, we have to be sure that we get our allotted number of kings for broodstock.
So when we're talking about broodstock, essentially the fish are coming in, you're harvesting them and using the eggs and milk for the creating new salmon at the hatchery down there in Ship Creek, and that's what's feeding all the rest of our streams and
exactly.
stocking operations. Okay.
Yeah, many of our streams.
Yeah, and if you don't get enough for that, then you really must be a bad run.
Right. So we're not going to take a chance on it, considering how weak other runs are in our region, and the fact that we're not able to see what's going on in Ship Creek. We're likely to err on the side of caution.
Well, I want to talk to a Ship Creek fishing aficionado expert here in just a moment, but I want to make sure that the listeners know how to reach us if they have any questions about sport fishing in South Central Alaska. You can get on talk get on Hometown Alaska at 550-8433. That's 550-8433. Or from outside Anchorage, 888-353-5752. And the email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And if you email me, I'll get it here in the studio and read your questions on the air. And now I'd like to welcome Jim Lavrakis to the show. Jim is the owner of Skookum Charters down in Homer, and he's also a former photographer for the Anchorage Daily News, someone who I worked with and I believe Ken worked with as well when we were writers and working with Jim taking the pictures. Right. And he's also a super fisherman and has spent a lot of time putting a line in the water here around Anchorage. Jim, thanks for being with us.
Well, you're welcome. I'm glad to be here, but this interview is holding me up from going fishing. As soon as we're off the phone, I'm out on the boat with my wife, and we're going to go look for king salmon out in the salt water here.
Well, we'll try to hurry it up then. The weather here in Anchorage is gorgeous. I hope it's nice down there, too.
It's, overcast and a little breezy, but not a bad day at all.
All right. So, Jim, I remember you spending a lot of time down in Ship Creek. What was the attraction of fishing Ship Creek for an Anchorage? I guess you weren't totally an office worker, but you're definitely tied to your assignments and being in town.
Yeah, and that's true. And it's just what the two of you have been talking about. It's the access to a marvelous fishery in the middle of downtown Anchorage, 10 minutes away from most people's homes. You know, that was true for me. And I just, when I found myself with more time after my sons moved out of the house, I started fishing at Ship Creek. And it was that pretty steep learning curve at first, but it's a pretty friendly place. People will stop and help you, or if you have to ask a question, they're very willing to get you set out and set straight. We're fishing that particular waterway. It can be tricky at times, but there's help to be found.
What are the tricks? I know it's very turbid and it's very muddy. You've got to be prepared to deal with a lot of mud.
Yeah, and it's part of the learning process is understanding where the mud ends. And you know, kind of where up a third of the creek that you can fish, and it's pretty comfortable wading out into. As soon as you get off the bank and into the creek, it's gravel. But when you get down below the halfway down the creek, then it gets to be that pretty heavy and deep creek inlet silt, and can get dangerous at times. So you do what I would recommend. For folks is to start at the upper end of the river. That's above the A Street where the little restaurant is there, and up to the wire near the old power plant. Fish that area. Spinning tackle works well with Vibrex type lures, and fishing with a bobber and eggs under a bobber. That's just a blast for young and especially. Old and young, especially for young.
And timing is important, isn't it, in terms of the tides? You want to be there. Do you want to be there at the very beginning of the incoming tide or where in the tide cycle?
Well, as you get more expert, you learn when the fish will start pushing up in the tide and the timing of the tide. know, it's if it's a fairly high tide and the water has risen past that restaurant and at the wire, then you fish an hour before to an hour and a half. You kind of need some water moving for, it seems right at slack there. It gets very, very quiet as far as the bite, but when there's a little water moving on either side of the slack tide, there's better chances that you'll have a fish be more aggressive on whatever you're throwing at them.
So you could fish before the low tide then.
I'm talking about the high tide right now.
Oh, okay.
But, when it's a low, I mean, there's some guys who I consider, you know, very knowledgeable, who will fish the very mouth of Ship Creek, and that's very tricky because of the mud and the tide roaring back in at very low tide.
Potentially dangerous. So, yeah. No, I've heard the same thing as well. If you really want to catch them, go right all the way down and right at the beginning of the incoming tide, but then you're out in the quicksand essentially.
That's right. And there's ways to, you know, there's certainly ways to learn how to get out there safely and get back. You head out to the end of the jetty there at the small boat launch, and you got to watch the tide, though. And, boy, there's the gullies in there. There's where the water has cut. There's gullies that are 4 feet deep with mud, and you can get stuck in that. Actually, one time I when I was doing these little videos for the Daily News, one of them was me getting rescued by the Anchorage Fire Department, and they have a great system for getting people out of the mud, but they'd rather not use it.
So this was a staged rescue, or did you actually need rescuing?
No, it was a staged rescue.
All right, good to hear.
And filmed and put on the web.
Yeah, yeah, they shoot air down to get your feet to come loose or something, right?
Well, they use what they call a water knife, and it's just a big pipe that's cut a slanted edge, and they actually what they do is they hook it up to their engines and shoot water under your boot, and the flooding water under the boot loosens that silt so that you can pull your foot loose.
Hmm.
So it's not air; it's water.
So how does the fishing at Ship Creek typically compare to other places? I mean, how far away would you have to drive for the next best salmon fishing experience, in your opinion?
I think going north, the Klutna Tail Race, when it's good, that's a good option for getting out of town in a beautiful setting. And lately, Klutna has not produced kings very well. It's been better with the silvers. But certainly at Bird Creek out of town, gorgeous setting, a wonderful river, and that's silvers only. No king fishing there, but the silver run is pretty good, and it's a lot of fun to fish.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You have to deal with a lot of other people, of course. Any advice on how you deal with the combat fishing or fishing around a lot of other folks?
Yeah, it's a learning experience with a pretty high learning curve at the beginning, but the main thing is to just stay calm and don't get frustrated and angry with others. But the one thing that I always tell people is watch the guy upstream from you, and if he's casting or flipping his fly out there, you go in unison and you pick up in unison and you just get kind of work together and synchronized.
Right. Cooperation will get you farther.
Yeah. Then you're less likely to get tangled.
Yeah. So tell me about what you're doing now, Jim. You don't have a halibut quota for your charter operation. So you're doing something else that's kind of creative.
I do fishing, straight salmon charters, king salmon and silvers.
Out of Homer?
Pardon me?
Out of the Homer Harbor?
That's right. Yeah. We have a great, boat that's kept in the harbor here, and we live in Homer full time now. When I left the newspaper, we moved down here, and we've had a family cabin on the other side of the bay, behind Yukon Island in Little Tutka Bay, and I do a fishing and dining tour. It's an eco tour, and I take people out. We go catch rockfish and cod. That's just a couple hours, just enough time to catch your lunch. We're not going to take fish home with them. They're going to eat those fish. So once we catch fish, we do a little bit of touring of the bays there, going to where our family cabin is, and cook up the fish as a bouillabaisse, you know, fish stew, and feed people their catch. So it's a different kind of eco tour, and it, for me, it's just a wonderful. I just have a great time doing it.
Sounds like fun. Sounds like maybe more fun than hauling in a. Going out as a charter captain, hauling in more and more halibut every day. So anyway, folks want to hear about Jim Lavrakis' business, link to it, Skookum Charters, is on our website at alaskapublic.org. And we're going to move on, Jim, but if you'd like to stay on the line, you're welcome to take callers with us, or you may want to go out fishing, so that's up to you. But thanks for being with us.
Okay, well, you're welcome. I'm going to go.
All right.
We got tied to jump on, so thanks, Charles.
All right, good luck.
Yep, take care.
And now I'd like to go to a caller. Karen is on the line from Willow, talking about the king salmon situation. Karen?
Yes, hello. I'm wondering if the lack of salmon making it upriver is because, the king salmon's making it upriver is because the commercial fishermen are over-harvesting.
Well, let's turn to Ken Marsh from the Fish and Game Department here. What do you think, Ken?
Hi. Yeah, you know, that's a lot of people are wondering that whether or not it's the commercial fisheries. I mean, we're looking at times like this for, for a definitive reason on what's going on. But that's not apparently the problem at this point. The problem is too widespread for it to be commercial catch in one or two places. Apparently a marine survival issue.
Is it possible a bycatch issue with the big ships that are offshore? Or is that something that's been looked at?
Bycatch is being looked at, but again, bycatch wouldn't be the silver bullet in this case. It's just too widespread, too big of an issue.
Too many fish, yeah.
I think what we're looking at is weather, ocean currents, ocean temperatures. It's a little bit like you could compare it somewhat to weather patterns we saw in the Midwest this last February. Places like Minnesota, Minneapolis, Chicago, places in February that normally have 3 feet of snow were 80 degrees. It was like, Miami Beach down there.
Mm-hmm.
We have similar climate changes or climate fluctuations that happen in the ocean. And this is probably a result of that.
Without getting too far afield, is there any thought that we are seeing a climate change impact, or is it more of a variability issue?
Well, it's probably largely a variability issue. As far as getting into ocean currents and temperatures, we leave that to the oceanographers,
right.
The federal government, NOAA, they're the experts on that. But we can say from our own records and our own experience with the department that king salmon runs fluctuate. And
yep.
We have good years and we have bad years, and they are cyclic. So,
all right. Well, thanks for that call, Karen. Now I'd like to go to Tom, who's calling from Anchorage, to talk about Chester Creek. Tom?
Yes, hi. I was calling about Chester Creek. And I know that during the spawning closure from April 15th to June 15th, there's some big rainfalls in that little creek. And then afterwards, there's a few, but not many. And I'm just curious, where did they go?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch what you said. There's a big...
Oh, in Chester Creek?
Yeah.
During the closure... For spawning,
okay.
April 15th through June 15th, there's some really big fish in there.
Okay, big fish. That I think we cut out a little bit. Okay, Ken, what can you answer that question?
Hey, Tom, yeah, you're absolutely right. There are some surprisingly big rainbows in Chester Creek for the size of the creek, and considering it's right in Anchorage's backyard, to get fish well over 20 inches on a consistent basis is pretty neat. Where the fish go, I imagine we have some anglers around town that could... Oops, I think we lost Tom there maybe, but he may be listening.
Yeah.
Hey, Tom, the way that what they probably do is move throughout the system. They probably go way up. They probably hang a little bit in University Lake. And I expect a good number of some of the bigger fish hang out also in Westchester Lagoon, where water's deeper and they can find plenty of food and cool temperatures in the summertime.
So when we're talking about Chester Creek, there's rainbows, salmon in there too?
There is a small salmon run, and there's also native Dolly Varden.
Okay, and then Campbell Creek, there's considerable salmon run, right? Or
well, yeah, depending on the year, of course. We've got kings that run into Campbell Creek. Those are native fish. They're not stocked. We have a native run of sockeye or red salmon that run up Campbell Creek. We also have the silvers later on, and that's an enhanced run.
Mm-hmm. And I often see, you know, young kids fishing out there in the bike trails, and that's a nice feeling to see that. Any special tips for fishing those little urban creeks?
I was one of those kids once. Right now, the biggest challenge anglers are going to have in local streams is, remember that big heavy snowpack we had this year?
Well, high water.
Yeah, record snows. It's melting now. It's making the waters high and leaving them a little bit murky. So the best advice I could give you would be to fish the lower reaches where it's legal to use bait. And that scent's really going to enhance what you offer them. So maybe little spin and glows with some salmon eggs on them, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you go up above Piper Street, I believe it is, it's single hook, artificial lure only. You wouldn't be able to use bait upstream of that. But below Piper Street, yeah, that would be the way to go.
And those regulations would all be in the booklet that you can pick up from Fish and Game or I suppose online. And we've got that link at alaskapublic.org for today's show. We've got a link to Alaska sport fish regulations, and you can find out everything you could need to know. This is Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. We're talking about Anchorage fishing. My guest is Ken Marsh from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. You can get involved in the show by calling 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, it's toll-free at 888-353-5752. Or by email at hometown@alaskapublic.org. Basically, anything about fishing in our area is fair game, and we'll do our best to answer it. Now I'd like to go to David in Anchorage, who had a comment about Ship Creek. David?
Yes, I'd like to know why there's neither the municipality nor the state of Alaska is interested in the fish in Ship Creek between Orcas, the poaching of fish in between Ship Creek and Reeve Boulevard, especially from the middle of July to through August. Along Viking Street, there's the last several years has been getting worse and worse and more arrogant every year, and the folks say there's no state trooper for the municipality of Anchorage, and the state fellows apparently are outside out of the Anchorage area working the lakes and such out of town.
So that's essentially fishing in closed waters, too far up the creek. Is that the way it
So, yeah, that sounds like what he's referring to here. And in below Reeve Boulevard to within 100 feet, I believe, above the dam is legal to fish for trout and Dolly Varden, but not king salmon. And I think he's probably referring to that as well. No, the state of Alaska is very interested in stopping violators. Unfortunately, we do have a trooper who's assigned to the Anchorage area and well beyond, and unfortunately, he's spread very thin. By all means, when you see violations in progress, call the wildlife safeguard number. There's an 800 number. I've turned my cell phone off, so I don't have it handy, unfortunately. Yeah. But wildlife safeguard number, you'll talk to a real person, you'll get a dispatcher, and you can tell them what's going on. And if there's a trooper available, they'll sure get them out there.
There's never a trooper available. I've called that number several times over the last several years, and it's a total waste of time. And the municipality will not take any calls at all, but they will if there's a bear, but they will not take it if there's a fish.
Right. Yeah, those fish are really overseen by the state of Alaska, not the municipality. So I can see where that would probably be their stand on it.
So it didn't sound like there's too much more we can do for you, David, though the point is well taken that they're the fish and wildlife troopers are pretty thin spread and may not be hitting all those issues that they should be. So thanks for the call. I just want to let listeners know that the number that Ken was referring to for Fish and Wildlife Safeguard is 800-478-3377. And it's easy to find online. I just Googled Fish and Wildlife Alaska Wildlife Safeguard. We'll get that link up on our website at alaskapublic.org as well. Ken, a lot of these fish are coming from our hatchery, and I guess there have been some big changes down there. What's happening with the hatchery down in Ship Creek?
Well, we've got a new hatchery that's started up and started producing fish and cranking them out into local waters as of this spring. It's the William Jack Hernandez Fish Hatchery, and it is really an impressive facility. I believe we're going to be opening our doors to the public sometime in July, so stay tuned for that. But it's a state-of-the-art facility. It's huge. It's probably the size of, I like to say, two or three Costcos glued together. There's a catwalk where people can actually walk along and view all the tanks and view the various infrastructure and just see thousands and thousands of fish that are being cranked out at the William Jack.
Are there going to be tours for people to go and take a look at it?
I believe we're looking into that right now. I'm not sure what the status is, but that is something that we hope to do.
Okay. And now, which species are being produced there?
Well, we're producing king salmon, rainbow trout, Arctic char, and grayling for sure. There may be some other species as well. If they're not in there now, they'll be integrating them eventually, like lake trout and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh. How's the decision made as to where you're going to stock and what you're going to stock? Is that just a staff decision, what seems like makes sense, or do you take public comment or for Board of Fish? How does that come about?
Well, a little bit of everything, of all of the above, I should say. First of all, a lake, if we're going to stock a lake, needs to have public access on it. A lot of times you'll get someone call up and say, hey, there's a lake at this location. There's no fish in it, but it seems suitable for fishing. Would it be possible to get fish in there? And then we'll take a look at the lake, our access people will, and realize, well, it's all privately owned around the lake. There's no way for the public to get in on it. In that case, we wouldn't be able to stock fish. But in places where there's going to be public access, where people would be able to go in there and actually enjoy the resource once we put them in there, those are the ones that we stock.
All right. And when fish are stocked in a lake, are they size that folks are sort of catching them right away, or are they left there to grow a few years and then they get up to size? How does that work?
Well, a little bit of both. In recent years, there's been a lot of very small fish put in just because we were in the transition from the old hatchery to the new hatchery, and weren't able to produce the number of large fish or larger fish, what we call catchables, that we would like to. But now that the new hatchery is up and running, we're able to produce catchable fish. These fish are anywhere from 8 to 10 inches long. They're perfect kid size, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of adults like me who've caught huge king salmon that get tickled over catching 10-inch trout, too. I can do it all day long. It's like potato chips, one after the other.
Uh-huh.
We also put in broodstock. Now, broodstock are fish that we've actually allowed to grow to large mature size for egg takes and such, and we'll plant those in local lakes as kind of a little bonus here and there. Cheney Lake got some real nice rainbow trout broodstock this year, and I got calls from a lot of very delighted anglers over that. Some huge char put in Little Point Campbell Lake out at Kincaid Park. One minute a little kid might be catching 10-inch rainbows, the next minute he's got a 24-inch char on.
Huh.
And yeah, you get some giggles out of that.
So is that, it sounds a little bit like the hot slot machine in Las Vegas. You want to know when those fish have been popped in there. Is that something people can find on the web, or is it just sort of?
Yeah, we do have that on our website under our hatchery tab if people want to explore that. I'm not sure. I believe we have that updated currently. Recently, we were stocking so many lakes that they weren't able to keep up with it. So what you saw on the internet wasn't necessarily in real time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what kind of advice would you have for maybe a beginner who wants to give it a try? Maybe they've never even fished before, and you know, this seems like, wow, this is not too challenging a way to start. What mm-hmm. would you advise them to? What would they go out and buy, and how would they go about doing it?
Well, they'd want to go to their local sporting goods store or even some of the local grocery and, you know, Fred Meyer Walmart types where they have a sporting goods section. There they can get the South Central Alaska Sport Fishing Regulations, which is a really good way to start. It also has the Fish and Game Anchorage phone number, so when they have questions, they can call me or one of my staff, and we're there 8 to 5, Monday through Friday, ready to take questions.
So you'll just give advice to the public if they want to.
Absolutely.
Oh, cool. Fabulous, yeah.
But all you need is a little spinning rod or a little fly rod, depending on, you know, pick your tool,
mm-hmm.
and salmon eggs, spinners, you know, various types of flies, we can kind of help guide you into that.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of which lake you're going to and what kind of fish you're going after?
We actually have online at some of the links I think you've provided, we have a guide to Anchorage area lakes. We also have, for people who want to stop by the office at the corner of Raspberry and C Street, we have a brochure of lakes that actually gives directions to local Anchorage lakes, shows the public access, and tells what kind of fish they can expect
right.
to catch.
And how many lakes are there, you know, in our area that that are available? I mean, like a couple or many?
Oh no, there's many. There would be well over a dozen here in the Anchorage area, between here and Girdwood and out towards Mirror Lake, you know, Aklutna area. And if you want to get into some real good stock fishing, the Valley Lakes, if you want to drive about an hour or even a little bit less out towards Kepler Bradley, we've got, I believe it's somewhere around 80 stock lakes out there. So,
but if you've got a kid at home, summer vacation, who is watching TV or playing on the computer, you can hand them a fishing rod and send them down to the lake, and in the sunshine, they can have the time of their lives.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all of these lakes have been stocked. Unlike the last few years where it's been sporadic, the lakes have been stocked consistently now, and they should have some good fishing.
Terrific. Well, the show is Hometown Alaska. My name is Charles Woolforth. I'm talking with Ken Marsh from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game about fishing in Anchorage, in and around. We're talking a little bit out of just the city limits. We'll be back in just a moment, and I'll give out the phone numbers for you to get involved in the show. Please stay with us. This is Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
It's Hometown Alaska. My name is Charles Woolforth, and our topic today is fishing in Anchorage. And we're going to go a little bit afield from Anchorage in a minute here. It is one of the remarkable things about living in this city is that we are in a real sort of metropolitan American city, but wilderness is just right at your fingertips. My family, we've done quite a bit of boating in Cook Inlet, and my gosh, 10 minutes, and you are just out in total wilderness from Anchorage. And the other way, well, it's half an hour drive up to one of the trailheads in Chugach State Park, and you're off on your own. So it's a special place to live, and everyone should take advantage of it if they can. On our show, we're going to be talking in a minute about fly-in fishing, which is sort of another version of our fishing from Anchorage. But I'd like to welcome listeners who have questions or comments about fishing. Basically, anything you want to say about fishing in South Central Alaska. The phone number here is 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, it's 888-353-5752, toll free. Email is hometown@alaskapublic.org. And now I'd like to invite Willis Thayer of Russ Flying Service to the show. I had some of my early most fun fishing experiences flying out from Anchorage. This amazing feeling of you take off from Lake Hood, you fly 10 minutes, you land, you're now totally on your own, and you have this wilderness fishing experience. And I just wanted to make sure folks knew about that, and so I invited Mr. Thayer to be with us. Thanks for being on the show with us.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me.
Well, I don't want to start with the bad news, but we kind of have to. Is the king salmon are not around, and I'm wondering if that's putting a bite into your fly-in fishing operation at Rust's.
You know it has. There are definitely a certain number of clients that come up with that's their main goal when they're going fishing this time of the year is king salmon and king salmon only. So we've seen the numbers fall off a bit for our different fishing programs that involve king salmon. But then you get a good percentage of folks that are just up for whatever we can offer fishing wise. You know, it's whether it's catch and release fishing for rainbow and grayling, or even going out and doing some pike fishing. So definitely good opportunities out there still, but it definitely has affected our reservations the way the reg changes.
So tell me about your typical or your most popular product in terms of taking people out from Lake Hood. Is it for a day trip and guided, unguided? What are most people looking for?
You know, our fishing program, probably the most popular part of our fishing program, is definitely the guided one-day fly-out fishing trip, where folks leave here at 7:30 in the morning and they're back here, you know, by 7 in the evening. And even for the clients who are coming up on cruise boats and don't have anything with them, they just everything's provided, so they can just we can pick them up at their hotels in the morning and get them out fishing. Everything's provided for them, and they can get that fish in Alaska experience that a lot of people want to check off their list before they head home. We can provide that in one day's time. It's probably our most popular, probably the most popular part of our fishing program at the time.
How do you decide when you're taking off, like where you're going to go? What's the I suppose you want to look for the best fishing, but you know the guests may not want to be with a bunch of other people too. How do you sort of figure out where you're going to go each morning?
Sure. Well, with the guided fishing, where everything's provided for the folks, we're working with some pretty specific lodges that we're taking folks to. So, you know, it's not so much a matter of what destination we're figuring out to go to every day, so much as making sure the people know what to expect based on what date they're going. Primarily, we're going out to Lake Creek and work real closely with Riversong Lodge out there primarily, and then a few others in that area.
I see. Now, what about Alaskans, more experienced fishermen? What kind of arrangements can they make for fishing experience? I mean, what...
You know, there's a real wide variety there, obviously. You know, anywhere that has a lake that's landable and we're willing to go to, we can take folks to. So we definitely get that's definitely a more local thing. People research an area they want to go to, and they'll call and say, I want to go to Lake X, and you know, or this river over here, and we'll let them know what it costs to do so, and you know, just drop them off with their tents and their camping equipment, and they're on their own. Or you get folks who will do float trips on a river, you know, drop them off at the headwaters and pick them up at you know, a landable spot on the river or the confluence of that river and another. So those are some real pretty well, not exclusively, but that's what you see a lot of locals doing, is those float trip type deals where you got to have all your own gear and a pretty high level of experience floating different rivers and obviously be comfortable out in the middle of nowhere on your own for a
right.
while.
Do you kind of check them out to make sure that they know what they're doing, or do you just
ask some questions and qualify them a bit before you sign them up for something that's gonna put them into a river that has a, you know, good chunk of class 3 white water and can get up to class 4 if it rains a lot on them while they're out there, you know. So definitely ask some questions and try to qualify folks that way.
I imagine your guys would know where the fishing is pretty good from day to day. Is that and you would, you'd share that among yourselves? Probably wouldn't share it with other people, or what?
You know, that is, you know, a lot of it's just kind of you know, this particular company, Russ Flying Services, has been in business for, well, this is our 49th year doing this. So a lot of what we do is based on historical data, you know, and that's you know, there's not a whole lot of secrets out there anymore, but we definitely have a few things we take folks to that you don't see other air taxis doing.
So suppose I'm buying my spouse an anniversary present of a fly-in fishing trip. How much would it set me back for the two of us to go guided or perhaps unguided?
Well, sure. Yeah, there's a couple options there. Yeah, the unguided trip, where you're bringing your own gear and everything, and we're, depending on location, maybe providing you with a boat and motor to fish for the day. Those types of trips go for $295 a person, uh-huh. And then the fully guided, fully outfitted trips go for $495 a person.
All right. Might be a pretty good anniversary gift, don't you think, Ken?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Willis Thayer from Russ Flying Service. I appreciate you being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right. My name is Charles Wolforth. It's Hometown Alaska. I'm here with Ken Marsh from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. And I would like to take a few calls. We've got some folks who've called in. Christy is calling from Wasilla about lake fishing. Christy?
Hi there. I just had a question. What is the best way to catch fish in the lake? We can get out there in the canoe, but we haven't been real successful at actually catching fish in the lakes. And we live in Wasilla, so we've tried multiple lakes out here.
Uh-huh.
So we're not sure what we're doing wrong.
Well, are you using lures or flies, or what kind of method are you starting with?
lures, and we've tried a bobber, and we've tried eggs, and we've tried, you know, a weight and no bobber, and we're not sure how deep really to fish for, you know, lake fish, and so we're just kind of, we're kind of new at that.
Okay. Well, basically, this time of year, with waters warming up, you know, with summer temperatures and everything, your best fishing is going to be early in the morning or late in the evening. Usually this time of year, as we get towards July, especially with those hot days we had last week, as water surface temperatures warm up, I won't even start fishing in the evening until close to 9 o'clock sometimes. And that can be part of it. The other part of it can be just how deep or shallow you're fishing. The fish aren't necessarily going to be in the real deep stuff, and they're not going to be in the super shallow stuff. What you want to look for, think of those lakes as like an individual lake is like a soup bowl, where the bottom's very deep, and then it kind of slopes up into kind of a shallower type of area. Try to fish that edge effect, especially off of points and in bays. Anywhere from, I would say, 4 to 12 feet. Boy, I wouldn't go any deeper than 12 feet for sure. You should be able to troll with your canoe, troll spinners, small panther martin, small meps, I'd say size 0 to 1, various colors along those areas would be good. As far as your bobber, when you're wondering, wow, you know, should I be fishing deep or shallow? If you see fish rising, well, that tells you that there's fish up near the top, so you might want to fish a little bit shallow. If you're not seeing any fish feeding on the surface, you might want to fish deeper or even right on the bottom.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Good question, Christy. And let me just follow it up with this, that as a successful fisherman, I've seen different philosophies of, like, how long do you keep fishing in one spot without success, you know, because you don't want to leave, like, the next cast would be the one, but on the other hand, you don't want to flog the water all day without doing it. And I've seen some people just cast, move. What's your philosophy, Ken?
Well, I'd say that's a real good idea. Yeah, you know, try a likely looking spot. Look for structure too. You know, if you can see some, like, submerged logs or brush that kind of falls off into the water there, that's places where fish can hide. Also, their prey can hide, things like little dragonfly naiads or dragonfly nymphs and damselfly naiads and leeches and that sort of thing hang around there. And that's where fish are going to be looking for that food and taking cover from predators like ospreys and otters and that sort of thing.
Okay, excellent. Now I'd like to go to Jeff calling from Anchorage about lake stocking. Jeff?
Yeah, hi. I heard your comment earlier about stocking and the inability to stock private lakes. And I understand that you can't put a public resource into a private lake. But I'm wondering, for a private lake owner, what are the options? My understanding is that there are no legal ones in Alaska.
So essentially stocking your own lake?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much the case, Jeff. And that just goes back to state law. I don't have the particular law at my fingertips here, but we have pristine fisheries here for the most part, and I think as part of an effort to keep our fisheries pristine and really reduce the event of invasive species, that's why we have to keep it closely regulated. We've actually had instances where yellow perch, which are native to the lower 48, have appeared in lakes like on the Kenai Peninsula. And a fish like that could prove devastating if they were to spread on local trout and salmon fisheries. We value our native fisheries far too much to let that happen. So that's why those regulations are in place.
Well, have you considered selling fish from the hatchery to a private person?
You know, that's something you could take up with. We actually have some folks you can talk to in Juneau that specialize in that. And if you want to give me a call at the office after the show, I'd be happy to direct you to those folks.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
Bye.
All right. And now I guess Danny's on the line from Anchorage. Is Danny available? I see his name here on the board twice. So, Danny, can you hear me?
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. What did you? You're calling about the Lacey Act, and you could first tell us what the Lacey Act is and what your call is about.
Well, I'm not the expert. I mean, I think you are, if anybody. I wanted to remind people, if they're thinking about monetizing these fish that they're catching, just a reminder, public service announcement, that there's a law against that. And could you elaborate in any way? It would be appreciated. Thank you very much.
So in other words, you can't sell sport caught fish.
Right. That's the law.
And it's subsistence fish. Mm-hmm. And is it a federal law?
Well, it's a state law here.
State law?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry, by the way, Ken, hi. I'm sorry for putting you on the spot, but is nobody ever talks about this. It's the Lacey Act. And could you elaborate any more on it, the history of it?
Well, I really couldn't, Danny. I'm not a legal expert as far as the Lacey Act goes. I believe that has something to do with laws that would transcend state lines, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, with the times being as they are in recession and all, people are taking advantage and they're using these, you know, smoked salmon products or whatever as cash.
All right, so I get where you're coming from. Let's talk about that for a minute. Fishing is sport fishing, and it's for catching fish for your own use, either to just for the sport of catching and then releasing, or to take home and eat. It's not for selling or trading.
Right. You can't trade, sell, or barter sport caught fish. You can give your fish to a friend. Mm-hmm. I could catch a salmon and give it to you.
That would be fine, Ken.
Okay, we might be able to talk. The reds are starting to come in, and we've got a forecast for a good strong red run here in Cook Inlet. So, on the back of the regulations booklets, there's actually a transfer of possession form, which you can fill out, and I could go ahead and put my name and your name on there. Mine is the angler who caught the fish. You as the recipient, and tell, you know, what fish I'm giving you. I'm giving you three red salmon from the Russian River. That's perfectly legal. If I was to trade you for anything, or if I was to want some money or anything like that, that would be illegal.
All right. And the only exception when you can fish for somebody else is if it's a proxy for an elder or somebody, a disabled person. You have to go through quite a bit of paperwork to do that.
There's a little bit of paperwork involved. And the proxy is available to Alaska residents only. You have to be live here for a minimum of 1 year. And it applies to, I could go fishing for somebody who is 70% or greater disabled, legally blind, or age 65 or older, as long as they're a resident. And yeah, there's a form that you'd fill out for that.
All right. Thanks, Danny. I think we're going to move on. I wanted to talk a little bit more about an issue that we brought up briefly before, which is the invasive species and the issue of pike, these voracious predators getting into some of our lakes where they don't belong. First of all, I'm curious at how that occurs. Mm-hmm. So somebody has to have gotten that fish and put it in there, right?
Well, yeah, absolutely. In the case of closed systems, basically the background goes something like this. Remember that pike are indigenous to parts of Alaska. Some people think that pike are bad everywhere, and that's not the case necessarily. Pike are actually indigenous north of the Alaska Range and in southwest Alaska. They're part of the environment. They have a niche there, and that's perfectly fine. Where you get into trouble is when you introduce something like pike to a place where they're not indigenous. And that's what happened here in our Susitna Valley. We think sometime back in the 1950s particular lake that is a feeder to Lake Creek. The pike were placed in there probably innocently by some people who just enjoy fishing for pike. I think the common belief is these folks actually flew over the Alaska Range, caught some pike where they're indigenous, brought them back to their own home lake where they had a cabin, and thought, we're going to have our own pike fishery here. We don't have to worry about flying all the way to Fairbanks area to do this. Well, the problem is, in a high water event, those pike spilled over into Lake Creek, and it's a little bit like getting a virus into a blood system. You know, all these waters are connected, and that's how pike spread. Now, there's one other way pike spread, and that would be kind of a repeat of how they originally got here, and that would be when some, what we call a bucket biologist, picks up a bucket full of pike that he catches at a lake in the Susitna Valley that might be infested with them, and dumps them into a local lake. That's how they get spread around the Anchorage area and Kenai.
And I don't get why people would do that, because, I mean, they prefer to fish pike over trout. They want only pike to be there. I mean, what's...
I think that's part of it. Mm-hmm. I think in many cases, it's simply people who enjoy catching pike. I think there may even be an element, depending on the situation and the individual, where it could be a form of environmental vandalism. I mean, mm-hmm. no different than defacing a park right. bench or something yeah. like that. The penalties are severe. We're looking at a year in jail and a minimum, a fine of $10,000. You don't want to be the poster person right. of the first person we catch doing this, because believe me, it's going to make headlines and examples
without,
will be made.
Without doubt, yeah. And then to get rid of them, you essentially have to kill every fish in the lake.
Yeah, that's the fact. And we've been doing that in Anchorage area lakes. We've been extremely successful in cleaning up these lakes so that we can put in fish that are indigenous to the area and that folks can enjoy catching, like the rainbows and the salmon.
So give me an example of where that's been done.
Well, it's been done in Sand Lake with great success, and it was also done in Cheney Lake. It's been done in a couple of Kenai Peninsula lakes as well, and I believe there may be some other lakes that are slated for this fall.
So you kind of have a census of what fish should be there, and then after you've killed all of the fish with poison, mm-hmm. you go back and you kind of restock the lake with the ones that would naturally have been there.
You start from scratch. And one thing I would caution against using the word poison with rotenone, that's probably too strong of a term. It's really an organic compound. And something that people have used, I believe it's in the South Pacific, for centuries to actually stun fish so that they could collect them. What it does is it renders fish gills unable to process oxygen. It's safe for everything else. The mm-hmm. fish will go belly up because they're not able to breathe. It dissolves very quickly. It's removed from the water within hours or days at the most, and it's not going to affect ducks, dogs, people. Nonetheless, fishing game takes every precaution when using it to make sure that everything's done right.
All right. The show is Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth. My guest is Ken Marsh from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. Just have a few minutes left here, but if you want to ask one final question of Ken, the number here is 550-8433. That's during the live part of the broadcast from 2 to 3. We'll also be replaying at 7, and of course, we won't be taking questions at that time. There's been quite a controversy going on recently, Ken, about boots with felt soles, which I guess are about the best thing for not falling down, but they've been... I guess not outlawed, but ruled out by regulation by the Board of Fish. And what was the reason for doing that?
Well, you know, about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I finally parted with a big pile of cash and got myself a real nice set of fancy wading boots with felt bottoms on them.
Right before they got outlawed. Huh?
Yes, it was wonderful. And then now I hear from an awful lot of people in the same boat. And yeah, it was a proposal that was submitted to the Board of Fisheries by, I believe, Trout Unlimited, which is a conservation fishermen's group nationwide. And the concern was that pathogens and invasive species could be transferred from people visiting the lower 48, for instance, to our waters. Let's take an example of, let's say, whirling disease, which has proven devastating in some fisheries in the West. Imagine something like that being introduced to one of our pristine rainbow trout fisheries like the Kenai River or someplace out southwest. That's the precaution that they're taking. People are absolutely right when they say that felt soles are wonderful for walking on rocks. They have a real good grip, and they can keep you standing up in a swift current. But manufacturers, more states are starting to jump on this bandwagon. New Zealand, by the way, other nations are too. New Zealand's been doing this for some time, and they're very hardcore about it. They'll check you through customs and make sure that you don't have felt soles. Yeah, it's a precautionary measure, and manufacturers are coming up with new types of bottoms to put on boots all the time, and I think we're gonna find some good alternatives.
Do we have evidence of that actually happening here in Alaska of some kind of pathogen going on a felt sole boot, or is that more just something that might happen?
I think it's a proactive measure that was mm-hmm. submitted by or proposed by Trout Unlimited, and the board felt that it held enough merit that why wait until the horse has left the barn.
Does the same Board of Fish make these decisions for sport fishing as for commercial fishing, as for all types of fishing? And how do people interact with that if they don't like the way things are done?
Well, it is a public process. People can submit proposals to the Board of Fisheries, whether it be commercial fisheries proposals or proposals affecting sport fisheries. You can do this online. We have proposal forms that you can fill out and submit there. Or you can come by the office there at the corner of Raspberry and C, and we'll provide you with forms. And, if you have a good idea that you think needs to be a regulation, or if you think there's a regulation out there that needs to be repealed, you're part of the public, become part of the process. And sometimes all it takes is one individual with a good idea to get it done.
And then there's an advisory board process as well, right?
That's right. Yeah, we have local communities have advisory boards that also weigh in on these various issues.
And that would be maybe a for a novice, somebody doesn't know how to write regulations, that would be a good avenue for them, I suppose.
I would say so, yeah. You could probably get some great advice from mm-hmm. your local advisory committee.
So as we're wrapping up here, we've talked about the king salmon being a disappointing issue this summer. What's the outlook for the other species? I mean, do we have predictions on how silver and red fishing is going to look later in the summer?
I haven't heard predictions yet on the silvers, but I do know that our forecast for Cook Inlet red salmon is strong, and we're already seeing that in the Russian River. We're seeing a good return of reds already. Problem is the water's a little bit high there, but folks who know what they're doing are catching their limits of reds. I'm seeing good numbers showing up in the Kosilov River there on the Kenai Peninsula, so we're looking for a good strong run of reds. I'd say right now, since the fisheries and life in general is dealing us lemons, you know, we can make lemonade out of this by looking at other options. King salmon are wonderful, but right now we're just going to have to tighten our belts and let them go, and let's go for some of the reds. Let's go check out the lakes. Let's go for grayling on the Denali Highway. There's all kinds of options. And if you need ideas, give us a call. We're full of them there at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game for sure.
Okay. Closest, I remember working with the guy who at the end of work, you probably know him, Hal Burton. He would say, "Let's go to the Russian River. We can be back here for work at 8 o'clock tomorrow morning." And he would actually drive down there, fish all night, and come back without sleeping, and mm-hmm. be back at his desk. Is there an easier way to fish reds from Anchorage, or is that sort of the closest?
You know, that is a tradition. That's an Alaska tradition. Been there myself.
People won't believe it from elsewhere, right?
As far as salmon goes, that's probably going to be. Well, until Bird Creek opens up. Bird Creek mm-hmm. opens up July 14th. It's closed to all fishing at the moment. It's always closed to king salmon, but somewhat after that opening, maybe another week or so after July 14th, start looking for pink salmon showing up there and silver salmon show up.
Is this the year, pink salmon or every other year, right? So this is a good year for them?
Good year for pinks, and Resurrection Creek out of Hope is a great place for pinks and silvers.
All right, great. Yeah. Well, thanks, Ken. Ken Marsh has been my guest. He's with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and is also a well-known writer about outdoors. We also heard from Jim Lervakis of Skookum Charters and Willis Thayer of Russ Flying Service. You'll find links to all three organizations on our website and a lot of other information about fishing in Alaska. Hometown Alaska will be taking the month off for July. I guess we're going fishing. We'll be back in August. Hometown Alaska is on the web at alaskapublic.org, and you can join us on Facebook at Alaska Public. Pat Yak is Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Charles Wolforth.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Hometown Alaska's theme song, Lead Dog, is by Kevin Barnett from Eagle River. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling